Welcome, one and all, and do enjoy this episode of Pete vs. Total Mix. I mean, Rec Addict After Hours, of course. Episode 46.
Five.
I knew it. Of course I did. So, yes, we just heard our little intro on Zoom. Pete has defeated Total Mix. How did you do it?
More videos, to be honest. more YouTube videos, and eventually realizing that at the end of the bus, on the master bus, you have to set up loopback, which associates all your inputs to the correct output. So you guys can hear it, and it gets recorded in my door at the same time.
We made it. At last, you are a master of Total Mix. Excellent. So obviously Pete's here. Luke is here with a... What are we beveraging over there? Looks red.
It is red. It is wine. It is the sort of thing you would find in Lidl or Aldi. Nothing too fancy. It's actually the Aldi equivalent of a very nice wine called Sangiovese, which I'm trying for £2 less than the normal price, and it's quite good.
Nice one. Can't say I'm a massive wine buff, but I do like my Gewürztraminers. Very sweet and a bit kind of sickly sometimes, but that does it for me. So, Rack Addicts time once more. Any exciting weeks from you two friends over there?
Well, I found myself with 2 hours spare on Thursday morning. My partner went to do an interview for a new job in London, and unfortunately we had to go in the middle of a pandemic to actually she actually had to interview at the office, which was it was what it was. You know, they were doing it safely and everything, and it was absolutely fine, but I thought rather than brave public transport and rather than have her worry about the traffic, I would drive her to it, because I had nothing much
in central London.
I've done quite a few gigs in London over the last couple of years, so I'm used to it.
You're familiar with the
pain. Yeah, I don't mind it at all. And actually, having not gigged for, you know, nearly a year now, it was like old times. So I found myself without 2 hours. I found myself with 2 hours, at which I would do nothing of particular, seeing as you can't really go and do much in a pandemic in London at the moment. So I sat and watched Sunshine again, because I happened to have it saved on my phone. Oh.
Nice.
And it's a brilliant film. I love the score, but I was struck by something really stupid that they did in the script. There was a point where their hydroponic farm, their oxygen battery, if you like, caught fire, and they said, let's fix this by opening the reserves and pumping loads of oxygen into it. And of course... they got
that would make for explode.
Yeah, they got the physics of that right. You know, the thing detonated, but they could have just done the reverse, and it would have. Well, I mean, there would be no drama then, would there? I suppose is the issue.
Of course, you're one of those script nitpickers.
A little bit, because the rest of the film's actually quite good, apart from there's some dubious stuff as far as gravity goes. But for the most part, it's a brilliant film, and of course. Wonderful score, and it's a Danny Boyle directed, I think, and just really enjoy a really good little sci-fi film, an underappreciated sort of horror kind of suspense thriller film that has some really cool sound design too. Whenever the sun is on screen, there's always this horrible harsh noise of like sand hitting a wall, you know. It really helps to convey how traumatic the experience is. But yeah, I just remember this point where they had a fire and they decided to add more fuel to it, and they're supposed to be scientists and astronauts.
Okay, that's actually quite an interesting thing. Either of you, have you watched a film, TV show or something, and actually thought, it's a film, but the sound design was really cool? Because one thing that hit me, I'm a bit of an anime person occasionally, the second season of One Punch Man. This is one of those shows, if you haven't seen it, superhero type thing, and the premise is the hero is so horribly powerful that nobody can possibly defeat him, and he's just really bored, which is quite entertaining. But in doing this kind of thing, the new villains need to be more and more powerful, and you still need to get that sense of scale and power difference and all that kind of thing. And in the second season, they really showed the kind of ramping up of these attacks they're doing with really cool sound design. So I really enjoyed that. Either of you, have you seen something on, actually, those Foley artists were doing well.
Well, particularly Foley or sound or the soundtrack.
Either sound design Foley.
I mean, mainly. I mean, I think we actually. Oh, I certainly mentioned this before. I mean, I find myself more inspired by film music than potentially other forms of music.
Mm.
In a lot of cases, and invariably these days, it is film soundtracks that get me excited. And I think that there's, you know, possibly some of the, you know, where some of the most interesting contemporary music is going on in some respects.
Any particular recent examples of soundtracks that grabbed you?
Well, again, I'm mostly repeating myself from early in the year, but the soundtrack for Lady in the Water, which is an M. Night Shyamalan film.
Oh, yeah.
And he uses the same composer for all his music. As you know, directors sort of have a certain penchant for favorite actors, favorite composers, and so forth. And it's the soundtrack for that particular one. I never really kind of gripped me with any of the other pieces from the same composer with any of the other M. Night Shyamalan films, but that particular one. Particularly, there was just certain key changes, certain chord movements and progressions, and then just had something for me. And I'm still enchanted with that film. And a good percentage of that enchantment was based on the score of the film.
Nice one.
I think definitely cartoons do it quite well. I was watching, I can't remember the title of it now, which is terrible, but if it comes to me, I shall remember it. I shall bring it up during the course of the podcast. But I was watching a cartoon on an adult cartoon, if you like, not in that way, but a mature cartoon.
Where are you going
on
this?
On YouTube, so you know it can't be too bad. And it was just some of the they gave particular sound sets to particular characters. There's one character who was quite happy and frivolous and carefree, and whenever she gestured, there were like noises of kind of dog toys or squeaky plastic, or like sound of things inflating or deflating. When there was there's another character who was like an evil demon who had immense power and was referred to as like this radio demon or whatever, and whenever he spoke, it was through the filter of a sort of 50s Vox or kind of also done like that, with that sort of classic radio sound.
Yeah.
And whenever he spoke, there was the sound of static or knobs turning and creaking and stuff. There were evil characters that whenever they moved, there was the sound of cracking and things breaking or snapping. And just it helped to really set the mood and gave each character their own dimension beyond the voice acting. And I feel like you can get away with that more in animation than you can in live action, but certainly it is done. And when it's done properly, it sounds great.
Nice one. Well, definitely let us know if you do remember.
I will. I'm racking my brains now.
Check it out.
I mean, the other one that reminds me of, again, another manga one, was the original soundtrack for Ghost in the Shell.
Yes.
The series.
And just the original, actual original. There is a Ghost in the Shell series as well, but just for the original mm-hmm. Ghost in the Shell movie,
oh, gotcha.
The one, which is, to a degree, what the live action one followed in respect to the storyline. But the one thing they didn't do was do the soundtrack, and the soundtrack made that particular anime very notable. And it was it's a kind of strange cross between traditional Japanese music and Romanian kind of Gorgarian chant.
It's beautiful. I know the track.
Kind of choral.
Interesting.
It's really haunting, really, really atmospheric. And unfortunately, with the live action film of a couple of years ago, they didn't. I don't know whether licensing prohibited it, but it would have really benefited from that soundtrack. But they completely scrapped it and had another composer come in and just redo it all.
Yeah, so I must confess, I haven't seen any of the original stuff. I really should go back and check it out.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, the original film or cartoon anime has a distinct vibe about it. And although the live action film was very stunning and obviously very, you know, modern CGI and all the rest, special effects, it really didn't. It lost something in translation.
Mm. In two kinds of translation, I suppose, as
yeah,
well.
Yes.
Well, Pete, what have you been up to this week?
Apart from sort of losing myself with my new Oculus Quest 2, which
has arrived.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that soon. I thought we were waiting years for one of
these. No, well, they're very good. Facebook are very good at having everything to hand. So when they announce it, they have the product. and I believe they had made several million of these.
Wow.
So
they I've never heard of a supplier ever doing such a thing in my life.
Well, I think it was imperative for the type of release. So they've been pairing. Mm. I think the hardware has been ready for quite some time. And what they were possibly waiting for was some of the games vendors to catch up or get there, you know. And also, obviously, as soon as I actually installed it, I was up and running and playing a game within 15 minutes. That's how easy it was to set up and get into my actual account.
Nice.
And get into a game and have all my achievements that I'd already achieved in that game all there and ready to go. But one thing it did do initially, it did a whole OS kind of setup. So you can see how they had all the hardware ready to go, and then they're tuning the OS to the right last minute of the release. And then once the release and you've got it, it instantly goes out handshakes, because you have to log into your Facebook / Oculus account to get it going, and then pulls down the latest version of the operating system.
Day one patch, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So did that straight away, and I'm sure there'll be quite a lot to follow, because there's all sorts of development bits and pieces that you can switch on that are in beta that are under the cover. So nice. I've been doing that, which is great. Other than that, unfortunately, my good old trusty iPad has decided to...
No. Is that the one from our little mobile Rec Addict setup?
No, this is my original first. I've had this for 10 years.
Oh, wait, the first-gen iPad?
No, this is Gen 3, but I'm sure I've had it at least from sort of around 2010. I'm assuming I don't get my dates wrong with the iPad. But yeah, I'm convinced I've had this for at least 10 years. And now it's really acting up. It's spuriously. It can't upgrade and hasn't been able to upgrade to the latest operating system for some time. So it's a few iOS's behind. And it's now started doing some quirky stuff whereby you're using it and suddenly the Apple sign, it's kind of rebooted itself in a weird way. And so I persisted long enough. So I think 10 years from an iPad is not bad. This is the one that I have under my pillow. So it's you know, I know you're not supposed to take devices to bed with you and it's bad for your sleep and so forth. But this one, it's under my pillow and it's always there. So I can whip it out and find out what... chaos is happening outside in the outside world and so forth, and derive my entertainment. I've obviously got Netflix and all the rest of it on there. So today I've gone and acquired a 2021, so I've got the latest one ready to go, which should be interesting. So and they've actually come down in price. So that was £329.
That's ridiculous.
So that's
not too terrible.
No, and that's, you know, quite a decent CPU in it. I'm sure it's going to be nice and snappy. No frills, but I quite like. As you guys know, I'm not a fan of Macs in general, i.e. for computer type usage. But I do like the phones and the tablets. I think they work really well. So this leads on to my old machine, which is still functioning, and there's still some interesting programs on there. I've got a virtual version of the MS-20 from the Korg Classic Collection, and I've got a Lecture Tribe.
Korg one.
And then I've got the React table, or the virtual version of it. Are you familiar with that synthesizer? The one with
I remember it being a circular light thing with these glass-looking block things. Is that the...
Yes.
Yes,
that's
cool.
It, exactly. And I don't think how much it was. I think they were custom-built to order. you could buy them, but they were very expensive for something that was really quite experimental and interesting. But they produced a iOS version of it, which is reasonably... I can't remember how it was, but it was only a few pounds. And I still want to use it. So what I have in my arsenal, I haven't opened it yet. I grabbed this from Maplin just as they, unfortunately, were going out of business.
In their death throes.
So I got this, which is a Behringer iStudio.
I've never seen that Behringer product before in my life.
No, well, it's exactly right, because this is a Gen 3 iPad. It's got the original, I don't know what, the 30-pin interface, not before Lightning.
Oh, yeah, the wide one, 30-pin dot connector they used to call it, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's got that, but this is the exact right. So this is a, basically, it's an audio interface sort of sleeve that you put your iPad in, and it gives you XLRs, and ins and outs and everything that you could possibly want.
Nice.
And some sort of some physical control, so that
Cheapest React table ever made.
Yeah, so I can turn my old iPad and just use it just genuinely for audio in the studio.
Nice one.
So that's what I shall be doing going forward.
Quite a steal. The only weekly update I think I can possibly share with you is this morning I did have the pleasure of playing a Korg ARP 2600. It was pretty magical.
Yeah, I'm quite
a bit of a hassle to get out of the flight case, to be honest. But it was cool.
I'm quite jealous, to be honest.
It was good fun.
And I do really regret not buying one when I had the opportunity.
Oh, but don't worry, the Behringer one will be coming around the corner soon. they posted on Facebook saying, "Oh, look, we've got loads of them. They're boxed up. We're selling them." And going through how rigorous their testing was, of course. And I said, well, tested my arse. I highly doubt they're actually testing any of them before they chuck them in a box, given our past experience with Behringer stuff.
I still would prefer the Korg one. I said that to you guys earlier, I see it as an investment. Physical investment, and that's only amplified by the fact that they only released 150 worldwide or whatever it was.
It really is a sleek unit, really nice.
Yep, I can see where the pounds have gone with that.
Let's move on to our little news section. Pete, is that first one with a pretty funky looking picture, is that one of yours?
Yeah, I just thought this was very really notable, great. Considering what we were talking about last week in respect to how the live music scene has been decimated by the current pandemic. And this brings us back to, again, something we touched on earlier in the year, novel ways of circumnavigating those issues. And the Flaming Lips, a band that I'm familiar with the name, but not familiar with their work as such, performed last week in bubbles, but not just them. Yeah. The whole audience are in bubbles as well.
It's great. So, they're sort of like thin zorbs.
Yes, exactly.
I love the one around the drum kit. It's really big.
We were talking briefly earlier about trying to eliminate wireless from any professional setups. I mean, this is just great, isn't it? Look at this.
What a... Has to be wireless, yeah.
I'm not sure how that works for oxygen intake. I would imagine that you...
Get a bit stale in there.
Yeah, I don't know how these... how long you could be sustained in one of these without asphyxiating.
I hadn't even thought of that,
point.
Yeah. That would be very warm.
That is a good point. I know with the regular Zorbs, which are the ones that you can kind of... In some weird places, you can kind of rent them and roll down a hill or be on a lake or something. Those are kind of open because they're an inflatable... blob. They're kind of two layers, but these are just kind of single layers, and yeah, oxygen. Worrying.
Some of them seem to be steaming up a bit as well.
Oh yeah, the lead singer definitely.
And notice they've got an extra special big one for the drummer. The whole whole drum kit's in there with him. So I mean, it's trying to. I mean, obviously the picture that we have before us shows how the concert turned out, but just think of the logistics of serving up these, because I noticed that it's not so easy to see, but some people are sharing those bubbles. They're not just individual people.
Yeah, it does look a bit unnaturally cozy inside those.
Yes.
Probably very sweaty. It looks funny. Maybe not the most enjoyable spectator sport, that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how practical. I mean, it's obviously newsworthy in the respect that it generates interest, but I don't know, is it an ongoing practical solution or just a novelty?
I doubt it. I suppose it'd be much, much cheaper than... Do you remember that rave suit that we saw, which had like the vape canisters that you could attach to the neck? That was before you joined us.
Oh, really?
Luke. It looked really sci-fi, kind of visor thing, shoulder kind of, you know, full-on sci-fi suit, but you could attach sort of drinking and vaping little pods to the neck thing. It was bizarre.
That was somewhat more practical than these, because...
Oh, definitely.
I mean, how do you clean them afterwards? Are they disposable?
Bin them, probably.
Yeah, I can't imagine they're cheap. I mean, just
strange. Definitely cheaper than a full-on Zorb.
But I believe they had already had a history of using these in their act. So there was a picture I saw with the lead singer, and he was sort of crowd diving, but with the bubble, and he was sort of rolling over their heads with it.
Bad shout.
Yeah, but yeah, that interesting. And I'm sure we're going to see many more interesting techniques or solutions to try and resolve this problem, because it's not going the issue's not going away in a hurry. People are very ingenious in respect to coming up with these ideas, so it'd be interesting to see as we go forward what other marvellous solutions are offered up. by the industry.
Totally. Hopefully somebody has a great idea and it can actually
work.
Rescue us in some way.
Yeah,
I fear it's going to be something more akin to very rapid testing that you do as you enter the premises or something like that. Mm. A test that takes a few minutes. You know, you spit into a test tube or a small plastic thing, and if it changes colour, you're all good. And if it doesn't, you can't come in.
Mm.
Possibly. And right. Also, or maybe, which is a bit controversial, health passports, which has already been discussed in lots of other scenarios for travel and so forth.
I suppose the problem with that is it's something that's so difficult to... at the moment, we don't have a reliable way of actually definitely saying if somebody has it or not, and how easy it would be to catch as well. They wouldn't exactly last very long, the health passport, would it?
No, exactly. You could literally be... It's a bit like an MOT. You could come out of the... You have an MOT and then...
All your suspension just explodes on the way down the road home.
Exactly. So it's only as good as the point where you're being tested, and after that, it's anyone's guess. So, but all these ideas have been kicked around all over the place, and it, as we've said, it's not just the live music scene. It's anything where there's a lot of personal interaction where these issues lie. But obviously, our focus is on the music scene itself.
Yeah, well, we'll keep up to date on that one. Our next little news article, something that I did see, and I would be quite excited about if I actually had any kind of setup at all these days. But the 1010 Music Blue Box, 1010 came out with a black box, and it's something that's still on Pete's radar, I believe.
Yes.
But the Blue Box is a teeny tiny little square mixer, and probably exactly what a lot of modular-y, doorless-y type characters have been after for quite a while. Similar format to the black box, but we've got six stereo inputs, so 12 mono tracks if you feel like having a rat's nest of adapters, and you can do send and return stuff. It has built-in effects, MIDI stuff for sync, and it's tiny. Really cool little machine.
Yes, I mean, it's exactly the solution to the problem I had a year ago, unfortunately.
Yeah, so is that's the pedal board kind of setup that you were going for?
Yes, and this would have been absolutely perfect. In fact, it's got more channels, but unfortunately it didn't exist at the time. Mm. And I went and spent an inordinate large amount of money on the small three-channel mixer that I bought, which is a very good product, very robust, and it does have an audio interface built into it, and it was the best solution to hand at the time. But this one's somewhat better, just purely by the fact that it's got more input channels.
Yeah, and one criticism I did see was that obviously touchscreen and a few controls, but it does have a USB host on the back, so you could just get a bank of faders really cheaply from sort of people who make MIDI controls like Akai and the like, and you know, have individual controls for individual channels knocking about. I'm really, really excited about this one. I hope it sort of transcends the modular community, which is where 1010 sort of live at the moment, and gets a bit more widespread, because it's such a cool little box.
I'm going to have to seriously think about whether I get one of these and maybe jettison the other solution that I've got. Let's see. These are not going to be available until December, I believe, from what I read on the 1010 Music website. And also, it's not exactly cheap.
What's the damage on one of those?
$499. And that's dollars, so I imagine that would equate to £499.
Probably. I don't think that's unfair.
No, it's about the average cost for a lot of their products are all in that around sort of £500 to £600 mark. And you've got to wonder whether this has got exactly the same, apart from the sort of interfaces, that it's actually been driven by the same processor.
Yeah, it might even just be a software change.
I mean, it's using the same
graphical change to the buttons.
It's using the same chassis as the black box. Same screen, I would imagine, same button layout almost, so it's very similar. And as what we've seen with all the 1010 Music, each box is hardware wise is very similar, so it looks like it's the software that differentiates, and maybe some of the subtleties, as I say, the all the stereo ins and outs on the back. Well, it's six stereo ins and then 12 mono outs, but it's all done, or not 12 mono outs, I do correct, six stereos, but they can split into 12 monos. As you say, lots of dongles and cables and quite a... But you could tidy that up, depending on how you've got it set up.
Yeah, you could easily make just a little breakout box if you feel like soldering. That could be done really cheaply.
And the effects, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how good the effects are, so, and whether you can use them simultaneously. It doesn't say it's a multi-effects process. Obviously, it's got reverb and delay compressor. But what I don't know and what I can't derive from the documentation is whether you can operate those simultaneously. But it's a nice addition, and the internal recording's a nice addition if you wanted to grab that that particularly inspirational freehand live set that you just knocked out and keep it for posterity.
Definitely. Now, Pete, does that mean it is time to bring us round to the segment called...
Luke's Spacey Bit.
Our favourite sector of the universe. Take it away.
So, this week we're going to look at something which made me scratch my head, but because it made me scratch my head, it also made me want to talk about it. So, we're going to talk about mini fractal universes that may lie inside theoretical charged black holes.
What?
Indeed. So, these black holes don't exist. They are essentially a theoretical object because they would require space to work in a different way. We have a cosmological constant, which was something that Einstein famously got wrong. He said that there's no reason for the universe to keep expanding. Doesn't make sense. Crossed it out from relativity, right? And then years later, we discovered dark matter and dark energy and essentially found out that the universe was constantly expanding in a certain direction. So for these black holes to exist, there would need to be negative cosmological constant C. And so everything would need to be traveling essentially into a black hole. So what is the use in studying something such as this, you might ask? Well, the use is that they are very mathematically similar to rotating black holes, which we know exist. We even rather famously took a picture of one fairly recently. And the problem with studying rotating black holes is that they are very mathematically dense. The whole literature around this is obviously extremely mathematically dense, but the implication by physicists is that studying a rotating black hole is incredibly difficult. A theoretical charged black hole is, by comparison, evidently mathematically simple to study. So they can learn a lot about the two things without actually having to study the real deal, which is very, very cool. It allows them to predict lots of things that might happen in such instances as looking at understanding superconductor technology. What makes charged black holes interesting is that if they were to exist, they would be covered in a haze of quantum matter that would essentially sit off of superconducting quantum haze, basically, that would sit off the edge of the black hole. A superconductor is a substance that conducts electricity without resistance. So any study that goes into understanding how a superconductor works is very useful, because one of the major problems in, say, for example, the industry of quantum computing is that it's very difficult to get a quantum computer to function in such a way as you could ship it out to the public, because room temperature superconducting hardware does not exist at the moment. You have to keep a quantum computer very, very cold, pardon me, in order to function, because only at such low temperatures do the devices that we can conceive of nowadays conduct electricity in such a way as that it would be useful. So any mathematics that can be done easily on a theoretical black hole that can influence the progress of superconducting is very useful. So there's that.
Let me roll you back a second. How do you study something that doesn't exist?
Well, not with a photograph, that's for sure. Not with a camera lens. Not with a...
By thinking very, very hard.
Indeed. So, yeah, this is the thing. Is a huge amount of physics doesn't necessarily always concern itself with the real. You can often infer a lot of things in science by looking at how things don't work and going, okay, well, let's work out the maths behind that and we'll be able to understand. We can rule things out, essentially. And so often... especially in cases like this, what they'll do is they'll conceive of something which they think would be mathematically impossible, but they also know that the sums and so on, if they account for certain things, are extremely similar to real-world phenomena, such as the rotating black hole in this instance is very similar to the non-existent charged black hole. So it allows them to do the mathematics of the situation a lot more easily than they would do if they were studying directly, studying a rotating black hole, because essentially all they're doing is crunching numbers over and over.
There we go.
What makes charged black holes newsworthy in this instance, though, is that they can do something really strange where at the center of it, you would have a ever-repeating fractal micro-universe. And so it begs the question, if this was real, what would that even look like? How would you even describe something like that? You find yourself lost for words when it comes to a thing like that. And certainly when it comes to black holes in general, you have the issue of, well, what is a wormhole? Is a black hole a wormhole? Do they lead to other parts of space or other dimensions in general? We really don't know. We'd have to develop some new physics to sort of bring that to the fore, because nothing we really have in general relativity at the moment even begins to scratch the surface of that. I mean, I'm sure a physicist would tell you differently, but certainly that's one of the major issues, one of the major stumbling blocks. But in any case, a lot of study has been done into these recently, and one of the interesting things they found is not just are they useful for studying rotating black holes, not just are they useful for studying superconductivity, they are useful for this new strange idea of a multi-micro universe that would be fractal in nature. So if you looked even closer, you would find more universes within those and so on. It's just one of those quirks of maths where scientists went looking for one thing and found a million others, which is always so interesting to me.
And suddenly the confusing became more confusing.
Yes. So I'm not a physicist. I don't know if either of you two are, but this is the sort of thing.
Oh,
that...
no. I got a C at physics A level. I'm not a physicist.
Yeah, I didn't do anything beyond GCSE. It must be said. I got a, what did I get? I got a B, I think. Or it was either a B or an A. I was quite happy with it, but I didn't understand what I did. I just sort of did some maths. One of those.
That's all it is, yes. Really. Just maths.
But so yes, we have this new kind of black hole which will be useful for studying other black holes, called a charged black hole, within which is contained bizarre fractal micro universes and superconducting,
dropping the knowledge bombs as always.
I try.
Thank you kindly. Any more from our space correspondent?
Well,
today?
We had a brief worrying update that may be something worth mentioning. We have confirmation of where the leak may be coming from on the space station, but I think it might be a slightly more dangerous situation altogether. Apparently a big chunk of the Russian section of the space station has started leaking in an altogether new way, which is very, very worrying.
New and more frightening.
Every time we talk about this, the conversation always sort of drifts between, isn't it worrying that there's a leak in space altogether? And I tend to take the position of, no, they're professionals. They know what they're doing. You know, all of these things are designed to ebb and flow. And of course, some pressure release is inevitable. Not this time. Not this time. I think it's one of those things where it is rather a more worrying situation. But of course, they will have it under control very soon, but the story seems to get bigger and worse all the time. I'm very much looking forward to the day where we just see the headline, leak found, astronauts safe, nobody's to panic, all good.
Leak found, they put duct tape over it, everyone's okay.
yeah duct tape, absolutely. Or gorilla glue, perhaps.
Either would work.
You joke, but I would imagine the solution most probably is some sort of tape, some sort of bonding tape or some squirty stuff or something like that that they can either apply internally or externally when they actually find it.
Almost definitely. I think the nerd in me hopes for some sort of, high-tech space resin epoxy, but in some sort of, sci-fi delivery device. But no, it's probably a roll of tape.
It'll be an EVA, won't it? They'll go out there with some sort of like a grease gun type of thing and squeeze it, like toothpaste style, all over.
Like like when you get the, like when you get the seal done on like your lino flooring.
Yeah, that's exactly what I imagine, but a kind of NASA built applicator.
Yeah, absolutely.
And some special compound that is guaranteed to react and set in the vacuum of space.
I guess, yeah, because it wouldn't have any way to sort of dry out or oxygenate, would it? So
it needs some way to sublimate.
Yeah,
you know, so
expanding foam would be quite catastrophic, wouldn't it?
So it would have to have an internal reaction. It would have to be some sort of compound that reacts with itself.
Yeah, two-parter or something.
Yeah, something like that, and it mixes in the nozzle and. Or, as I say, it's some sort of self-bonding patch that they can apply, which, again, has some sort of reactive sort of material that it sort of bonds it. You know, the longer it's on there, the stickier it becomes.
I tune in next week for more exciting developments in Rack Addict's Space Glue Edition.
Yes. I had to fix my garden hose this summer, and I, based on that experience, I would not want to be the person responsible for gluing back together the space station. I was not successful.
Did you try and glue a hose?
No, I taped it, but that didn't work either. So yes, I can't imagine having a space station riding on my ability to use tape or resin or whatever.
Yeah, well, from space glue to YouTube, not my smoothest thing in the world, but our usual closing recommendations, I reckon. I actually have one. Even though I thought I was at the end of my YouTube lists, I remembered an acoustic guitar man called John Gomm. That's J-O-N space G-O-M-M. John Gomm is an incredible player. He sings as well. You may have seen him, his song called Passion Flower, which is where I reckon you should start. He's also got a new album, or new songs coming out at the moment at least. But he plays, you know, your classic percussive type stuff that you're sort of playing some drummy type bits on the body of an acoustic guitar, but he also uses the tuning pegs in melodic fashion very accurately, and it's absolutely nuts to watch. So he's doing tapping, strumming, playing harmonics, using the tuning pegs to retune some of the strings and percussive stuff, and singing all at the same time. It's absolutely mad. John Gomm, Passion Flower. Check him out. Who's next?
Because having just scrolled through YouTube, I've remembered the name of the cartoon I was referring to earlier. Word of warning, it is not for everybody. It is very immature, mature, and it has garnered itself a fair bit of controversy. But it was called Hazbin Hotel. That's H-A-Z-B-I-N Hotel. Any discussion regarding the plot aside, it's humorous, it's strange, it's very daring, and like I say, not for all audiences, certainly not for children, but it's the sound design is certainly noteworthy, and it's recently been picked up by one of America's edgier networks for production, and will be hitting the actual full swing of its production soon. But beyond that, I did want to share a little bit of another channel, but unfortunately the one I was after. Ah, there it is. So the other channel I wanted to share, the one that I sort of wanted to use as my YouTube recommendation, is Seeker, which is a channel I use sometimes for if I want to do some research into something, but I know I haven't got a huge amount of time to sit down and read an article. I tend to find their videos are quite on the money. They're quite informative, and they tend to give weight to points that I would find more interesting. When I want to do a quick bit of research on something, I don't tend to want to know about how much the funding was, or like how big something is. I want to know what are the scientific goals, what are the more interesting parts of it. And Seeker just generally are well-produced videos, and they tend to do some really good quality content that focuses on some of the more interesting details about any particular subject. So that's Seeker, S-E-E-K-E-R.
Which particular subjects have you found quite interesting?
Of course, so science and technology. I was supplementary to some reading I was doing about the James Webb and just general sort of knowledge that I have on the subject anyway. I've been following the James Webb for quite a while, but I wanted to do a sort of a refresher while I was cooking the other day. So I tend to put the YouTube on while cooking, and they have a great video on how close are we to launching the James Webb Space Telescope, which is something I definitely recommend people watching. If they're not massively familiar with the topic, it's a good watch, and it features essentially some of the lead technicians, and their roles are explained in a little bit of detail and what they hope to achieve at the project.
Awesome. What do you got for us, Pete, from the vast libraries?
Right, this week's channel recommendation is called Finnegan's Garage, and this is Finnegan, who's one half of Freiberger and Finnegan from Roadkill, which was one of my recommendations from earlier in the year. And this is his own channel that he's got sort of as a sideline, but it's on the same theme. So if people can't recall Roadkill, Freiberger is the, I don't know if he's still currently, but he was the editor of Hot Rod magazine in the US, and they are sort of muscle car nuts, if you want to put it in that term. Again, guys that really know their stuff. And as we've discussed many times, it's always it's a pleasure to listen to people who really know what they're talking about, especially if they're working on various bits of equipment. It's that sort of analogy of people, there's something sort of relaxing watching people doing things very competently.
It's always a pleasure to experience that kind of thing.
Yes. Now, Finnegan, basically most of his videos are from his home. I'm not sure which state he lives in. Convinced that most of the actual Roadkill stuff was sort of centered around California, which I think was where their offices are, but I don't believe he actually lives in California himself. Now, it's just people doing stuff that they really enjoy and getting paid for it at the same time. So again, he's always working on his various hot rods and creations, and he also does sort of race boat type stuff, but it's the same sort of thing, sort of big V6s and V8s with superchargers. And it's not just the sort of bolting it together, you know, if they needed an exhaust, they will sort of fabricate it out of tube stainless steel and do all the welding and, you know, everything. And it's all very done very competently. They know exactly what they're talking about. They know that type of engineering intimately. And this particular gentleman, again, he's a very good presenter. It comes across very natural. It's just like it's sort of like his natural persona. He's very chilled and very relaxed. Even when they have sort of major breakdowns, he takes generally everything in good spirits. Or certainly that's the way he projects in the channel. And it's just a very chilled watch. I mean, I'm not especially into cars, and I'm not into car engineering or hot rods or anything like that, but again, as I said earlier, it's just the people doing things in very well and knowing what they're talking about. As I say, you know they know all about it, so you don't have to.
Yeah, you can just absorb little bits and pieces.
Yeah, or you can just have you don't have to focus, concentrate on it. I mean, a lot of the times they're just going on road trips to collect cars they've bought unseen. And they've got various transporters that they're able to invariably a lot of these cars aren't drivable in any shape or form, and they have to be put on the back of a truck, and they've got a specialist truck to go and get that. And half the video could just be the road trip across the States to grab some classic 1960s whatever, and bring it back, and all the fun and games they have sort of doing that. And other episodes, they could just be welding up an exhaust.
Nice one. One reminder for the channel name again.
Right, it's just called Finnegan's Garage.
Excellent. Well, if you're still bored, teetering on the edge of a potential extra lockdown wherever you may be, now once more you have extra entertainment options. But of course your first port of call will be Rack Addicts After Hours episode 46. So please do tune back in your favourite podcast listening service, recommend us to a friend, reach out on the Facebook page Rack Addicts UK. We'll catch you next time. Farewell.